want to welcome you to another episode of Money Matters Top Tips for Success, where I bring on business owners, entrepreneurs, and executives to share their top tips for success with you. I'm really excited to have on the line today Gerard Dache. He is the president at Government Blockchain Association. He's going to tell us a little bit more about that. First off, Gerard, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks. Thanks for having me, Adam.
Yeah, well, hey, I appreciate you, making time out of your schedule to come on here. I was reading a little bit more about the Blockchain Association and the following you have there and some of the work you're doing, and we're going to get into that. I'm sure my viewers are going to be super interested in that, a lot of people out there that are curious about that technology. But before we go into that, let's just talk a little bit about your background and, you know, kind of how you got into business.
Sure. Well, I'm going to start from growing up and just kind of the things that were important to me. Growing up, when I had a great family background. We weren't really well off, but I had a great set of parents. Things turned when I was about 16. My dad died. My mom had a nervous breakdown, so I was somewhat. I wasn't technically an orphan because my mom was alive, but I had a mortgage payment at 16. And had some stuff to deal with. So I was I had watched a lot of John Wayne movies at that time, and so I wasn't really good at asking for help. I thought I was tough; I could handle it. So I ended up I would work about 5 jobs typically through high school and college, made my way through through both. I was never really an academic. Quite frankly, you know, I always wanted to have fun, but life had kind of put me into this place where I just had to work. And one of the lessons that I learned through that process was, you know, we're all dealt different hands, but the one way that we can play our cards is our love of work, right? So that was pretty much it. I just tried to. It took me 7 years to get through school. I didn't necessarily have stellar grades. But when I got into my first job out of school, I spent some time in the military. I spent about 13 years in the military. And that the military really taught me, I think, 2 things, right? One was a sense of mission. And the other one was I started as an enlisted. I ended up as an officer. But it really taught me to put the men first, right? We train our officers in the U.S. military. That when the food comes, that all the all your soldiers eat, and then you eat last, right? That and so it really kind of gave me that perspective. Anyway, when I got into the private sector, all I really wanted to do was really to work hard and create value. So I did that up until about 2005. In 2005, I started my own business called Common Sense Solutions. And we were doing process improvement, quality assurance, stuff like that. I became what was known as a CMMI lead appraiser. And that's the person that evaluates IT companies to determine whether or not they have the capability to win large government contracts. And I did about somewhere between 100 and 200 appraisals of companies around the world. I was invited to China. And at this point, I was a former Army infantry, logistics, and intelligence professional, right? In both enlisted and officer. And so the Chinese had invited me to China to evaluate Chinese government contractors to determine whether the Chinese government could trust them, because whenever they would send in their own inspectors, they got bought off. So they recognized the value of integrity. And interestingly enough, one night I was in China evaluating a very large company. This was kind of like a Lockheed Martin of China. And when it was done, we had dinner with the executives of this company in a private dining room. And so one of them said to me, I believe the reason why the Americans are so honest is because they believe in God. And they're afraid that if they lie, they'll go to hell. And I said, well, it's not exactly like that. And I'm a Christian. So I started explaining the gospel. So imagine this. I'm in a private dining room with the executives of this very large government, publicly held Chinese government contractor. All the members in the room are also senior members of the Chinese Communist Party, right? And so we start this conversation. Well, they had never heard this before. So they started asking more questions. And it was like water dropped, you know, falling onto a dry sponge. And they just kept soaking it up. And the more I would tell them, the more they asked. I ended up sharing the gospel for about 2 hours with senior members of the Communist Party in Germany. Mm. So I had some situations when I went to China, and I remember there was one case where it was a $500 million contract on the line, and I'm looking through the documentation. I said, "Look, this is fraud. You can't pass." And they were less than euphoric. So they sent They sent managers in to argue with me, and then directors. They're a very hierarchical society, right? And then they sent a vice president in to argue with me. Then they flew another senior executive from another city. They held me there for 3 days, and I'll never forget. It was about 10 o'clock at night. I looked out the window. We're in the middle of this industrial park, just in the middle of nowhere. And I looked out the window, not as far as the eye could see. There was a single light. I was surrounded by 30 Chinese people. Screaming at me.
One wow.
He said, "You've got to pass us. If you don't, our children, they will fire all of us. Our children will have no food." And I remember looking out the window and I thought, "I'm not going to get out of this one." And then after 3 days, I guess I got tired of it. They put me in the car, took me to my hotel. I got my stuff. They took me to the airport and I flew home. But my calling card has always been integrity. And you know that, so that, you know, the principles that I live by are very simple, right? And they're work hard, treat people right, you know, put others before yourself, create value, tell the truth, and just have some character. And as I think back on it, a lot of it is stuff that I learned from watching John Wayne movies.
Hmm. Wow. So, I mean, that's quite a bit of experience. And when I think about principles and principle-based living in business, but also just in your day-to-day, I mean, can you speak a little bit more about that? Because I have a lot of people in this podcast talk a lot about business. We talk a lot about, the mechanics of things. And in this case, I'm going to obviously grill you on blockchain and some other things you're doing there, because we want to know, and the listeners want to know. But let's just talk about a little bit more, if you don't mind, about the idea of principles and leading that kind of principle-based life, because I don't think it gets enough play, in my opinion, in business channels like podcasts.
Sure. Well, they're not complicated. I think that's part of why they're not talked about, because people are always trying to impress each other with, how smart they are and coming up with, all sorts of, new techniques and methods and models. But the basics always work, right? One of these guys that I really respect one time, he said, when all else fails, the truth always works, right? And so I would just say that there's a couple sort of principles that I operate on, right? The first one is, when I engage with somebody from a business perspective, it's got to be a win-win, right? You've got to figure out, you got to ask yourself the question, what is it that this person wants? How can I bring value to him or her? And I ask them, I ask these very simple questions, right? What is it you're looking for? What are you trying to do? And if I can create a situation where there's a win-win, then I'll engage. But if I can't, I'm just going to walk away. Because if you can't really bring value to somebody, it's not a long-term relationship. And you're just, at some point it's going to fail. So being able to just be honest with yourself in knowing what really is an opportunity and what isn't, I think is important. The other thing I think is dealing with failure, right? I've had a lot of failure in my life, and I think that I've got a four-step process in dealing with failure. The first one is step one. Whenever you are accused of something, whenever somebody confronts you, that your natural tendency is to become defensive. My four-step process is this. Step number one, right, be honest. Look, is this something that I really screwed up, right? You got to stop and think, is this a legitimate criticism, right? it isn't, you just got to let it roll off your back, right? Because people will criticize you, especially as you become more successful. You will get lots of criticism. And if you get spun around the axle every time somebody says something negative about you, you know, you'll be a basket case. But however, if it is legitimate, you got to accept it. Right? You got to own it. You have to say you're sorry. And, you know, I have folks, you know, from a legal perspective and other folks saying, no, don't do this. But you know what? I'm sorry. If I screwed up, I'm going to tell the truth. Right? That's just, that's it. Sorry. Right?
No, I get it.
The third thing is you got to do whatever you can to make it right. Right? The definition of integrity is about, you know, doing what is right, you know, even after the, you know, whether you know, whether it costs you or not, you just did the right thing. So you do whatever you can to make it right to the degree that you can, right? There's sometimes you'll screw up so badly, there's nothing you can do to make it right, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But you do everything within your capability to make it right. And the last thing is you got to let it go, right? You know, learn from it, of course, but don't let that thing inside of you eat you up, you know, for years to come and cause you to self-destruct. Because the secret is you're going to screw up a lot. If you're going for anything big, you're going to probably screw up as many times as you succeed, maybe more, right? And you can't let those screw-ups, you know, constantly eat away at you. You got to get past it. So, and then I would say the third thing that just comes to mind is I have two sort of mental images in my life that are tapes that are constantly running. The first one is, and they're both related to transparency. Right. The first one is I imagine that whatever I'm doing is being watched by my wife, by my kids, by my friends, by my colleagues, right? Anybody who knows me that might have an interest in the situation, I imagine they're standing all around me watching me say whatever it is I'm going to say, right? Do whatever it is I'm going to do. And I got to be okay with that, right? And then the other version of the same principle is one day I'm going to meet my maker. And when I do, we're going to take that DVD, right, that I have, and we're going to put it in a giant screen TV that he's got up there, right? It's, you know, all decked
up.
And we'll sit down and we're going to watch my life, right? And I got a lot of stuff on there that I'm really uncomfortable about that moment, right? I've done a lot of things I wish I hadn't, right? And so I don't want to add anything else negative to that DVD, right? And so that's sort of the rails that kind of keep me from just doing really stupid stuff.
No, I love it. And that's this is just great info, again, not just in business, because if you follow those principles, I mean, you have nothing's guaranteed in business, but you have a better chance of succeeding, in my opinion, and living the life that you would want to live and represent yourself the way you'd want to. Because again, you know, money comes, but at what cost also? It doesn't have to be a trade-off between money and principles. So I love all the things that you shared in the message. And so let's talk a little bit more about what you're doing right now. So let's talk a little bit about Government Blockchain Association, what you're doing, who you help, because, you know, it's a hot topic. Blockchain is revolutionary, definitely changes the world, is changing and will continue to change the world, along with AI and some of the other like real big things that are happening, and you're on the leading edge of this. So let's just jump into that one.
Sure. Well, let me start off with a really bold statement, and I really believe this to be true down to my core. Blockchain is the most transformative technology in human history. And the reason I say that is because almost all other technologies really generally have something to do with communications, right? And what communications have allowed us to do as a society is they've allowed us to communicate, coordinate, organize. And what's happened is that we've been able to do that from tribes to villages, to cities, to towns, to cities, to nations, to these super organizations like Google or the UN or things that are global organizations. And what happens is, as we are able to communicate at larger and larger levels, what ends up happening is we give up more and more local sovereignty to larger and larger sovereignties, right? In fact, if you look at, I think it's 95% of all advertising dollars in the world, right, they're spent on five companies, and you probably know the names of those companies right off the top. And so with that much sort of centralization of influence and power and control, right, it used to be that governments would tell some of those organizations, you know, they would basically write the rules. Now a lot of those organizations are saying, look, this is what we're doing, and whether the government likes it or not, right? So there's over history, there has been this concentration, consolidation of power, right? Blockchain, and it's got several different definitions, but the definition associated with the decentralization of it, it actually reverses that trend. And it says things like, well, hang on a second, I can send a currency, I can send money from me directly to you, and it completely bypasses the financial system, right? And the financial system is a system that enables governments to monitor what's happening, right? Whenever there's a crime, what do they always say, right? Follow the money. It also allows them to influence and control through the availability of money, fractional reserve lending, you know, impact on interest rates. And so governments essentially use the financial system. They use insurance companies. They use, you know, if you're gonna pay cash for a car, that car's the car dealership is required to send a report to the government. So money, financial institutions, right, it's a mechanism of control and coordination. If we all start using cryptocurrencies and essentially escape that system, there are governments at all levels that have a responsibility to do certain things, but there are very instruments that they use to do those things essentially are going to get short-circuited, right? On top of that, you know, cryptocurrencies are of fixed supply. So I'll use Bitcoin as an example. There's many others. But if you and I start using Bitcoin or some other cryptocurrency, right, and we're not using fiat currency, here's the problem. The problem is this. Right now, the way the government works is they spend more money than they bring in. And if you're a Republican or a Democrat, right, it doesn't matter. If you vote to increase taxes or decrease spending, you're not going to get reelected. So they keep spending more than they bring in. If your viewers haven't seen it, they should go to usdebtclock.org, right? And just see it. It's scary, right? Every nanosecond, we fall further and further behind. In fact, the interest on our debt right now is just the interest is more than every federal program minus the DOD, right? It's scary. So what do? We increase the money supply, right, through something called fractional reserve lending. So we tell the banks, okay, you can loan out more money. Well, they do, right? And what does that do to when you increase the supply of something, the demand stays the same, right, the price drops. So the value of the money drops. This is why we have inflation, right? Now, if I'm going to continue the same level, so what that does is that pushes more money into the crypto space. I used a cryptocurrency debit card for 3 months, right? And the price between when I bought it and I sold it at the gas station, 7-Eleven, whatever, I realized about $10,000 in capital gains. Now, I know what I'm doing in this space, right? And as more people learn how to do it, they can be in a space where their buying power continues to increase, or in the fiat space where their buying power continues to decrease. So as more and more people move out of fiat to crypto, what happens to the demand for money? It drops. That means that they have to create even more supply to maintain the same level of spending. That causes it to drop even further, which pushes more money into crypto. Right? It could be, we don't know exactly what's going to happen, but it could be that if economic activity leaves the fiat space and moves into this alternative space, governments might have to actually live within their means. They're just not ready to do that, right? There's so many questions, right? We don't have the answers to any of these questions, but there, you know, and then there's all the uses of blockchain, right? Blockchain is being used in healthcare. It's being used in supply chain. It's being used in voting. I was in Cameroon not too long ago, and I was talking to the president who has won duly, you know, legitimate democratic elections, right? He's been the president for 38 years. So when I was talking to the Minister of ICT, Internet Communications and Technology, she said, we're not going to talk about blockchain and voting. So it's just amazing. We're working with some folks out of Dubai that are putting blood and organ donations on the blockchain. Can I tell you just a little bit about the GBA organization itself?
Please, yes. I'd like to know more about it. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so 2018, this is now, it's January of 2019. 2018 marks our first full calendar year in existence. We currently have about 15,000 people attending events in 90 cities around the world. We've got, I think the number is around 54 working groups on every subject like asset management, identity management, supply chain, voting, healthcare, genomic research. I mean, the list kind of goes on and on. You can people can see a list at gbaglobal.org. And so what we do in the working groups is people in government can join GBA for free. And they come to the working groups and they say, here are the problems we're trying to solve, right? And then the GBA members, we're a membership organization. So individuals and companies pay a little bit for membership. It's really affordable. And they come to the table and say, well, here's our solution. Here's our white paper. Here's our idea. And they do the solutioneering in the working groups, right? Mm. And that way, the government employees can go back into those other spaces, and they now have the information that they need to make smart choices with regard to, how they're going to tackle some of these things. And so we got chapters all over the place. It includes CIOs for local cities. We got representation with governors. We had an advisory committee meeting today. We had legislators from the U.S. House of Representatives, and we interacted with local city. Local, state, national, and international governments. We've spoken with the United Nations. We have chapters throughout the U.S., Canada, Central America, South America, Hawaii, London, Paris, Dubai, Moscow, Beijing. We've got GBA members in Iran. Our chapter in Beijing is literally right next to the Chinese Communist Party Central Committee. Headquarters is in the former office of Chairman Mao. We've got chapters in Singapore, all through Africa, and all of this has basically come together. We were initially a meetup. Our first meetup was August of 2016. We became an association in March of 2017. We launched a website in March of 2017, and by the we launched a website in the summer of 2017, and then by the end of 2018. We have, like I said, over 15,000 people around the world.
Amazing. Wow, that's for any type of organization. That's quite impressive. But like in general, like that's a lot of people and that's really quick. I can't claim I know any other organization that has grown that fast. What's the mission statement for GBA? So what's the mission? If I'm in the space, if I'm in blockchain, and if I'm listening to this and I'm like, should I join GBA? I mean, it's just another thought. What would you say? Like, what's the mission of it?
Right. So we are a business league, right? And one thing that as you grow, people are always going to try to pull you in different directions. So I've been very, very passionate about clearly articulating exactly what we are. And basically what we do is we bring government and business together to find solutions. Hmm. So that's why folks in government can join for free. And that's why the individuals and the companies that join GBA, they pay a little bit of money so they can connect, communicate, and collaborate. And so success for us is every time we hear about a project where GBA members are working together, on an RFP or coming up with a solution or deploying a solution, we just brag about them big time. And so we have a social media outreach. If one of our working groups, create something, does something of value, we do a strategic outreach, and it'll generally hit 100,000 eyeballs within about a week because we want everybody to know about the success that they're having. Because that shines light on GBA. Right? When we shine light on our members, it makes GBA look stronger.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Well, and what's the website finally so people can learn more?
Sure, it's gbaglobal.org. So Government Blockchain Association, gbaglobal.org.
All right. Well, hey, Gerard, I really want to appreciate you for and recognize you for taking time out of your schedule for this interview. And thank you for educating myself and the listeners on some of the principles, the principle-based life and business, and also about educating us more on GBA. Like, I really appreciate it. And again, for all the viewers, check out the website if you're in blockchain, if you're even just curious about it. I mean, it is the future. So again, thanks, Gerard. Appreciate everyone for coming out and listening today. Again, Adam Torres on Instagram, Ask Adam Torres. You can follow me there to get all the updates of the books I'm releasing, events, all the other things that are happening over in the Money Matters world, and have a wonderful day. Thank you, Gerard.
Thank you, Adam. We'll be right back.